Well, good morning. My name is Stephanie Cooper, and I'm obviously not Commissioner Suberg, but I'm here in his place today. And I want to say that the commissioner is last month and then this month, he had scheduling issues come up, and there aren't many things that would cause him to be taken away from these calls. But, meetings with leaders from other states and things like that are among the issues that take him away. And that's the case today. But I am glad to have the opportunity to be with you today. And I am joined by some of my colleagues from the Boston office and from our regions. So from the Boston office, we have at a minimum, Kathy Baskin, Leldon Langley, Mary Beth Chubb, and John Murphy. And we may have more too. But I know that those folks are on, and then I think we have representatives from all of our regions, and we all take the time to join these calls because we find it really helpful to be in touch with all of you, to share information from our end, but also to hear about what's on your mind. So we're glad to have the chance to do that today, and we are also grateful to be joined by our colleagues from EPA Region 1, and I may turn the floor to them over in a moment. We have Denny Dart and Jeff Kopp, and they typically and today are coming with an update for us, so that's helpful. And then we'll also hear from John Murphy with the latest on training opportunities and any other updates from the Operator Licensing Board. We have time for your questions as always, and I have a couple of updates on sort of hot topics that I'd like to touch on. I should have noted that, as always, as it's become our custom over this past almost year, we do record these calls and we post them on our website after the fact so people can access the information on an ongoing basis. We have updated our Q&A document, which is, I don't know how long now, some 50 pages or something like that, but we've updated that, and depending if we receive any new questions today, we'll be sure to update that again and post it on our website. And I think people know we highlight the new information so that it's easy to find. So we'll do that after today's call as well. So I might, if Denny or Jeff are ready, I might turn to you now for the updates from EPA.
Hi, this is Denny Dart. Thank you so much. I have two things I can announce. And because I'm not on the Zoom call, I will ask Kathy Baskin to put them in the chat. But there are two upcoming trainings that may be of interest. On March 25th, there is an EPA training on low-cost compliance solutions for small wastewater treatment systems. And this is presented by a wastewater treatment operator in Ohio who's given a number of very popular webinars. And there is credit for this course, continuing education credit. And then the other is, just wanted you to know that for all of you who do report through NetDMR, there are regular trainings online on how to use that system, and the instructions for how to get to that training portal will also be in the chat. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Denny. And I would just note that on our call yesterday with the drinking water operators, we were talking about how Jane Downing's office at Region 1 had received information about potential supply chain issues due to the aftermath of the storm in Texas and certain chemicals that may be difficult coming out of Texas. And what the information that we received, the update yesterday was saying that in fact, that turned out to be more of a localized issue having to do with one supplier. But I thought I might mention that, and whether people want to talk about it now or later in the program, if people are experiencing any supply chain issues, that would be very helpful for us to know about. And I understand from Kathy too that our colleagues in New Hampshire and Tom O'Donovan also had some information on this. So I'll mention that, and if anybody wants to comment on it, feel free, or we could also pick it up later in the program. But I want to mention it because it was something we heard about through Jane Downing's office yesterday. Kathy, did you want to say anything more about that?
No, I think you hit all the high points, okay. Stephanie, and I see that Tom's not on today. So
okay.
He has been communicating with folks because New Hampshire DES also operates a treatment plant. So they've been communicate letting us know what they learn. So
right. And I think so far we haven't heard that it's an issue for anyone in our region, but obviously important to keep an eye on.
That's right.
Okay, great. Okay, so with that, I would turn to John Murphy, if you are available and ready to give your update on operator training and licensing.
Yes, thanks, Stephanie. the board continues to meet as scheduled and process applications. There's no current delays there. So as applications are coming in, they're being processed. Since we are in the beginning of a renewal year and licenses will need to be renewed with 20 TCHs by the end of December 31st, I will cover some training opportunities. There's a lot of good trainings, a lot of interesting topics going on right now. From the exam prep side, the NWEPIC Massachusetts Wastewater Operator Training is up and running and going for the spring semester. As EPA noted, they have their low-cost training, reporting training, and cybersecurity. NWEA has a webinar this afternoon at noon on CSO notifications. The Massachusetts Water Environment Association is hosting their quarterly meeting on March 18th on PFAS. Water Research Foundation has a slug of webinars on optimizing nutrient renewal removal. So a lot of good opportunities, a lot of interesting topics, whether it's PFAS, CSOs, nutrient removal, cybersecurity, exam prep, safety. So lots going on, a lot of training available. If you are submitting training requests, give me a call or an email first, just so there's a lot of applications are coming in for these webinars from individuals. The sponsoring agency typically does submit them as well. So I may be able to save you some paperwork if you reach out beforehand. So give me a call or an email and before you submit an application to make sure they haven't been approved. But other than that, things are going well. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, John. That's a lot of good resources that are available in the coming days and weeks. Excellent. So before we turn to any questions or thoughts that are on people's minds today, I just wanted to address a couple of topics. One that I suspect is, front of mind for most people, and that is the COVID vaccine. We spoke about this a bit last month, and we at DEP have stayed in touch with our colleagues at the Department of Health, and we have a designated contact who is part of the COVID vaccine team. And we had hoped to be able to provide through DPH a more specific update for you today, but we don't have that information yet. DPH is understandably focused on the phase and group of the vaccine that they're currently rolling out. So we know that the water sector falls in phase two, group three, and they're on phase two, group two. Now the vaccine is open to people 65 years and older, and people who have two or more serious medical conditions. So, the original projected timeframe for this phase is February and March. So now we're halfway through about that timeframe. DPH does tell us that they expect to have more information in the coming days. We have heard, DPH did put out a communication saying that at this time, given the limited supply of the vaccine coming from the federal government, that they are not supporting employer-run vaccination sites. And I know some of you had been thinking about that, either pooling facilities and resources, or some of the larger facilities have been thinking about hosting vaccination sites for employees. But at this time, DPH is saying that's not something that they will support. They are leaving it open to say, this could be revisited depending on supply. And I'm sure you all, like myself, pay a lot of attention to the national news. And I did see the president yesterday saying that they expect by May, every American could access the vaccine, which would really be incredible. And I'm really hoping that that will come true. And certainly for this sector, that you all are vaccinated well before that. So, I want you to know that we are really trying to get the information, trying to stay in touch with DPH, and we've let them know that DEP stands ready to be helpful, liaising with all of you and getting information out, you know, setting up whatever logistics might be needed so that people can, you know, get their appointments as easily as possible. We've raised things like, you know, what kind of credentials does someone need? Is a letter from their employer enough? So far, I've gotten the sense that probably will be the case. But we are raising questions like that. And if people have more questions about the vaccine or that they haven't shared with us before or want to share again today, we'll certainly take that back. But I just, you know, want to leave the topic just, you know, reassuring you that we really know how pressing this is. You know, the state is obviously, like all states, dealing with an unprecedented rollout here. And I think the good news is that Massachusetts has really fine-tuned and improved the operation in the past few weeks. So I do think that progress is going to speed up from here. So that was the most important topic. The other thing I just wanted to note is some of the stimulus funding. So we know that Congress enacted some funding in December, $638 million nationally, that's going to be directed to help people with overdue water and sewer bills, so particularly targeted at low-income households. And so while that funding will be distributed through the Federal Health and Human Services Agency, they haven't given the guidance yet and they haven't released the funding, but we speculate that it will follow the same pattern as the low-income heat assistance or the home energy assistance program known as LIHEAP. And so in Massachusetts, that is administered by the Division of Housing and Community Development. And so I know that it may be that some of the folks on the call today participated in a meeting that Jen Peterson of MWWA organized with DHCD yesterday. And I know Kathy and some of our team are also meeting with DHCD just to talk about, you know, how does LIHEAP work? How could they envision this program rolling out? Because we understand these will be one-time grants that ultimately the utilities will administer, we believe. Because as I understand it, the funding will not go directly to ratepayers. And actually, I see Jen in the chat. It sounds like she has an update from her conversation yesterday. So that would be great, Jen.
Thanks, Stephanie. So we met with the program manager for LIHEAP yesterday. And certainly a lot hinges on the guidance that HHS will deliver to the state on how to, you know, release the funds. They are clear that they want it to be as simple a process as possible. It would probably, you know, we'd have to come up with some dollar amount that customers would be eligible to apply for through the existing agencies. So they're spread across the state. There are 20 agencies that deal with LIHEAP. I think the important piece for everyone to know is LIHEAP is often undersubscribed. So it's going to be incumbent upon utilities to get the word out that their customers can go to LIHEAP and apply for this type of assistance. So, you know, they would certainly be looking for us to help them get that word out through bill inserts and whatnot. There, you know, there's a question about retroactivity. They don't typically pay for arrearages, but they certainly understand that the way in which our water and sewer billing works is sometimes lags behind. So, you know, be thinking about how to structure payment plans or something like that that could get the customers that assistance. It may be a while out, in all honesty. By the time the HHS gets the guidance to the state, and then the state will have to come up with their plan and go out for public hearing. You know, it could be several months before we see funding actually flow, perhaps even, you know, towards the end of the year. So that's, you know, I think a little disappointing, but obviously they have a process they have to follow, but they are very willing to work with us on sort of crafting the program, making it simple and making sure that utilities get whatever pot of money it is that is coming towards Massachusetts, which, you know, of $638 million distributed across the nation, if they did back of the envelope calculations based on similar formulas that they've seen come through LIHEAP, that may mean $20 million for Massachusetts. So definitely stay tuned, but we have made the contact and they are certainly willing to work with us on the rollout of the program.
That's really helpful, Jen. That's a great update. And I'm glad and not surprised to hear that they're open to the feedback and want to make it as simple as possible. And the notion of, everybody on this call thinking about how to do outreach, that's a good thing to think about in advance. And luckily there are a lot of tools to do that. So that's really helpful. Okay, so, we'll obviously keep an eye on that in the coming weeks. And as Jen said, it may not be in the coming weeks that we get the news, but we'll keep an eye on it and continue to think proactively about how to make that program work as simply as possible. And so with that, I think I will see if we have any questions or anyone who wants to speak. And Kathy, I'm not really keeping an eye on the chat because it's too much multitasking for me. I just can't do it. But I don't know if there are questions that have come up or people. I did see some people putting resources out, things like that.
Right. I have not seen any questions come in, Stephanie.
Okay.
But lots of great resources on how to stay in touch with Mass Water Environment Association and courses that are available.
That's great. And staying in touch and sharing resources during this time is so critically important. So I see something about CSO. I can't quite read it.
Oh, yes.
It's reminding me that I was going to give an update on that too, but is there a question or does someone else want to speak?
It looks as though it's a fragment of a question perhaps from Betsy Riley of MWRA. I think looking for an update on CSO
where
notifications in the new bill.
Yeah, so. No, that's a great prompt. Thank you, Betsy. Our commissioner, and I believe Fred Lasky of MWRA participated in a virtual bill signing. And it was actually after the bill itself had been signed. So I guess you call that a commemorative bill signing a couple of weeks ago. And we have been, particularly Kathy Leldon and team, have been hard at work thinking about the implementation of this law. And I believe we talked last month that we plan on holding a stakeholder process to get input from this community and others who are interested in the new law. So we do plan to send out more information about that in the next few days. I would say, we've been looking at, what the requirements are in the law and thinking about how DEP is gonna carry those out. And I would say, certainly the stakeholder process will be really important. Among the things we'll talk about are that we plan to develop regulations, and in fact, the law directs us to do so, to implement the law. We will be developing an electronic reporting system that will require, that will allow for CSO discharges to report the required information, so to have it all in one place. We're also looking for that system to serve as an easy way to produce the annual reports that are required by the law. So the reports are required to be, public information that summarize all of the CSO discharge activity in that prior year. And so the goal is a user-friendly system that will allow us to produce those reports easily and will allow those of you who are CSO dischargers to provide us with information in an easy, quick way. So that's the goal. And then with that, we also will have a website that provides the information that's required in terms of public advisories. So within 24 hours of receiving data from a discharger, from a system, we'll be providing that information. So those are, those are among the things that we're talking about and thinking about. And we look forward to having the stakeholder process to delve into them.
There are a couple of other questions, one related to the CSO notification bill as a follow-up from Betsy Riley. She's wondering if the new bill is just regulates CSOs or other discharges like sanitary sewer overflows, blending, so.
Yeah, so it does have some application to SSOs. And Kathy or Leldon, I don't know if you want to expound on that.
We are considering what the legislation directs us at and really looking at it very carefully. But it does look like SSOs and blending would be part of this.
Yeah, so we need to, you know, figure that out. And then, you know, what does that mean for all of these requirements? And what does that mean for, you know, the members of this group who will be, you know, complying with it?
There's another.
I realize question. That's important in terms of the scope. So.
Sorry.
No, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No.
That was it. You
I
go.
Didn't mean to talk over you.
No, that's all right.
So there's another question from Mickey Nowak asking about the PFAS in residual stakeholder meeting. When's the next one? So of course we had our first one at the end of September, and then we had two subcommittee meetings for technical input to groundwater modeling. So we've had three meetings, but the full stakeholder group has met once.
That's right.
So
that's right. And
we're an idea of when the next meeting is.
Yeah, I think, you know, soon. So spring, which is about to be here in a couple of weeks. So we have taken some time, and some members of our staff have taken a pretty fairly deep dive in the technical information. And Kathy mentioned that we ended up having two meetings with this technical subcommittee. And we've been looking at, you know, various types of models, and we have the benefit of a lot of sampling data that we've received from, you know, our AOS holders. So that's helpful. And members of the committee and others have provided us with a lot of research. So we've been taking some time to do our homework, but we do want to reconvene the group this spring to share what we're learning and then just to continue the dialogue. So more on that to come. And thank you for raising that one.
We also have a question on Bill HD 1794, an act relative, relative to providing a COVID-19 retirement credit to essential public sector workers. And he's wondering, the person is wondering if there's any update on that bill. I know that's something that our legislative director has been aware of and is following, but I don't know if we have any further update on that.
Yes, right. I am aware of it, but I don't know where it stands in the process. I see Jen turning on her screen, so she may have the latest, her finger on the pulse of this one, I suspect.
Well, so bills were filed. Now is the time to be getting co-sponsors for bills. The bills haven't yet been assigned to committee. And so at the point at which they would be assigned to a committee, then it would come up for a hearing. And that would be the opportunity for you to all weigh in. For those of you who aren't aware of it, it essentially would give 3 years of credible service for those working in essential roles during the pandemic towards your retirement age. So it's still probably a couple months away, I would guess, from having a hearing.
Yeah, and that's good context about where we are in the session. And this has obviously been an unusual year with kind of one budget cycle and session ending and then another one immediately starting. But, you know, a whole slew of bills have been filed and then they make their way through the process. And, you know, the legislature is also turning its focus to the state budget. So there are a lot of budget hearings that are going on. DEP has not, our date has not been scheduled, but I know that they've started that cycle. So there's also that going on in the legislature right now.
And we have a comment also from Melissa saying this is about the back to the CSO notification law, that when South Hadley had its discharges, they reported the event to the local boards of health, and it took a really long time to get through to a person. People didn't know why they were being called or what to do with the information. So I think what the message there is, DP has a lot of work to do on outreach, as will the dischargers. And so we'll have to make sure that the local boards of health are engaged. We know we will be engaging with the Department of Public Health so they can help us with those local boards of health. So hopefully there'll be a little bit more of a holistic approach to communicating.
Yes. And the Mass Health Officers Association too is a group that we regularly talk to. So yeah, there's a big outreach opportunity and responsibility that comes with this, because you know the communication it's not one way. You provide the information, then you need somebody to pick up the ball and help share it with the public from there as well. So yeah, we do recognize that. And I think we're thinking about that even in terms of our stakeholder committee makeup, because we want to have that, you know, those stakeholders at the table and knowing about the development of the program as it goes to help support it.
That's right. And even going beyond local boards of health, reaching the citizen, the people who use the river.
That's right, right.
And the environmental justice populations. Many of the CSO dischargers are in EJ, are serving EJ populations. And so that will be an aspect of our work.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is something that we are spending a lot of time thinking about as an agency. And so when we think about, you know, developing this new program, that will also be front of mind. So how do we make sure that those communities who are, you know, typically most impacted by environmental issues get the information and have it in a timely way, in a format and in a language that is accessible to them, so that they know, for example, you know, today's not a good day to go fishing, or not a good day to go boating. And now it is, now it's safe and you can go ahead and use the resource, type of thing.
I don't see any other questions. I see that Mike Jennings has posted a PDF on cybersecurity in the chat. And otherwise there, I don't see anything coming in. Maybe people would like to unmute and speak up.
Sure, we are happy to hear from anybody on any topic. So we'll have go ahead. Yes.
It's Melissa. So I just want to kind of follow up on what I wrote there. So
About
South Hadley, right?
South Hadley. Mm-hmm.
While we were in the midst of that release, I literally spent a ton of time contacting these downstream boards of health. One knew why I was calling, but was not prepared to do anything with the information, and the rest, and I think that was like another seven, did not even understand why I was trying to get a hold of them. In addition, we had a downstream boat ramp where they had people, and I could not get that other community to assist with getting that boat ramp closed. Like, I literally went down there three times to warn people and to try to get them away, because it was close enough to the station where, you know, they were right there. So definitely there needs to be education for these other groups on what to do with this information.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I would just compliment and commend you for being an environmental steward, going above and beyond the idea of, you know, dashing down to the boat ramp to try to give people, you know, the warning in person. That's with everything else that you must've been dealing with at that moment. That's really commendable. That being said, that shouldn't be the way that we want this to roll out. So, you know, we totally agree with you, and your, you know, your anecdote underscores the point, and maybe we'll use it in talking with communities and boards of health. And I think we'll, you know, we may rely on groups like the Mass Municipal Association, and all of these, you know, entities have their sort of, you know, annual meetings or opportunities where they come together. So I think it will be really important for DEP and for others to be, you know, continually putting the message out. Here's what this law is. Here's what the responsibilities are. Here's what you're going to hear, and here's when. So I think it's going to be an ongoing dialogue, communication, and continual outreach so that people get accustomed and know what the program is and how they can play their role, because it's critical.
Stephanie, it's Loudon. I just wanted to also mention that MassDEP has a webpage on CSOs.
Yes.
And has been updating that webpage as, you know, the new information has recently developed regarding the CSO bill. So Melissa and others, if you want to use those, you know, that webpage as a resource to help with any notifications and information dissemination, you know, just wanted to let you know that that's there.
Yes, and we'll be using it too. So we'll put that in the chat too, just so people can see that. And I think we have a link to a recording of the virtual event that I mentioned with the governor and with others. So people are interested in that. You can access that there as well. And we'll be continuing to update that page, as Loudon said. Anybody else? Anything on your mind? Any questions? Thoughts or otherwise? I see something coming in the chat from Wendy Leo.
Yes, so Wendy Leo of MWRA, you also need to distinguish between untreated discharges and those that are disinfected in terms of health risk, and also to avoid giving the impression that no CSO means that the water is quote unquote safe when some are contaminated by stormwater.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it is kind of a nuanced message. People and hopefully, you know, the overall goal of the law would be, you know, for the public to learn more about water quality, you know, and how do you find that information? But yeah, I think it certainly is it's a nuanced message. So we're going to have to be really thoughtful about that and really spend a lot of time hitting it home for people. And I think that will be part of what DEP will need to do on an ongoing basis in implementing this program. So it's not just here, this is coming, here's what the requirements are, here it's coming, it's gonna be, it's here, here's what it is, and it's, you know, continues to be something that we wanna promote public awareness of, and then for all the partners involved in sharing the information about events to, you know, make sure that they're playing their part and are aware of it. So I can already tell we're gonna have a really good stakeholder process because we have so much expertise and people are already thinking hard about this. So that's great.
And I did put our CSO webpage in the link. And if you just scroll down a little bit, you'll see information about the new law and the governor's commemorative signing of the bill. So
that's great.
It's all there.
Thanks, Kathy. So our next meeting will be Wednesday, April 7th at 9 a.m. And any information that we have, particularly about the vaccine, we'll be sure to be, you know, sharing with people in the meantime, or any other updates or information that comes up. And as people know, we're all always available. You know, you can contact your wastewater staff in the region. You can contact any of us at any time with anything on your mind. I'll give one last chance in case anybody has a thought or wants to unmute. Otherwise, we'll give you a little bit of time back this morning, and I know everybody's busy, so I'm sure we could use it. Okay, hearing nothing else, I wanna thank you for taking the time to be with us today and wish you all continued health and safety in everything you do. And thank you for everything you do. Take care, everybody.